Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk. Believe it or not, I actually got us all in here. In fact, I think we've got Dave Sparky Saganaki on the line. Nope, we don't anymore. I think he just dropped out. I saw him call in twice, though, so he's right around the corner from us, I know, and is going to, or right around the corner virtually anyways, is going to jump in here with us. We've also, too, got our good friend Jay Garman going to join us in a little bit as well. Now, I think this might be Dave again. We're going to see if we can bring him in. Dave, do we got you?
I hope so.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it is. We did it. I was just saying, I saw you call in twice, so I knew we had it. It was gonna happen one way or the other. So, man, well, welcome back. What a great man! It's been a break here. We've had, I think, three weeks off for the Tech Talk show, and so glad to be back and have you back on.
So we should actually have a good show today. We're well rested. Our brains aren't fatigued. We should be ready to go. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, welcome. And in case you're just catching up, this is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LP FM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. This was a big week in tech, too. It was very exciting. I had the pleasure of speaking with one of the top product technologists from Google and discussing the Google I/O conference and all of the really neat stuff that they had going on there with Google Android L and the Android Auto stuff and everything that's just happening and bringing things together, especially to their new their machine language or changing the language material. That's it. I think it's called material language, and just really, really cool stuff. I actually recorded that at some point here. We're either going to play. I've got 20 minutes of a block, but I'm thinking I may try to split it up into little pieces and play it out over time. The conversation just happened a day or so ago, so I haven't had time to completely manage it. If we lose you and run completely out of everything else to talk about, I could throw it on, but but that's a last ditch resort kind of thing. So
I'd like to hear it. I can't wait to hear this interview. You know, lots of exciting things are happening with Android.
Yeah, they really, really are. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see just exactly how much it does change over this next 6 months to a year or so. One of the bigger changes, and I didn't talk about it a lot with her name is Roya Soleimani. So we'll have that conversation later. But one of the things I didn't talk a lot with her about that I'm very, very excited about is the fact that Google is really aggressively approaching the document editing pieces. So in the past, if you wanted to edit like a Microsoft Word doc in your Google apps, you could do it, but it was going to mess it up. The formatting would be bad, and you would have to, you know, monkey and play around with it in order to save it back out into a document format for Microsoft Word. That supposedly is no longer going to be true. You can actively edit and even do collaboration with native Microsoft Office documents and work back and forth in there. So that's going to be a big boost to their business support.
Yeah, it's great when competition in the cloud brings us better services, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, Office 365 now, if you have that, if you subscribe to that, they now will give you up to 1 terabyte of storage.
Yes.
Offline storage, yeah. Or online storage, I should say.
Yeah, which is very cool, which I love seeing stuff like that, because that means that some of the competition, such as Google Docs and Dropbox and so on, maybe, you know, they may fall in line a bit and try to bump up their offerings as well. Now, if you get a Chromebook, you get from Google. Now, Google gives you, I think, 25 gig of storage just anyways. But if you get a Chromebook, they add an extra 100 gig of storage to that, but only for a year. So right now I've got 125 gig free, but then after the year's up, they're gonna hit me up to start paying for that. I know what the hope is. It's like, oh, we're going to give you all this free storage, and then you use it. And then I was like, oh, man, now what do I do? You know? Now you have paper.
Exactly. How hard? Once you get up that much loaded up, then what?
Yeah.
It's trouble to move it, right?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Well, now that being said, though, I have to say one of the things that I did not realize until I was using my Chromebook and really actively trying to transfer and convert both myself and my wife, so my family really, over to a Google Apps and Google Docs world, was that, we talked about a Microsoft Word application, how you can use that. So that's true. You can use that Microsoft Word document in your Google Apps and all that, but that takes up space, in your storage. If you're creating apps and sheets and docs and presentations and so on with Google's native stuff, doesn't matter how big that thing is or how many images you throw into it or anything else, that's all free. There's no use of space for that. So that's pretty cool.
The richest document with a bit of audio and video and everything else, that's not that, your docs aren't the problem. Music and video or movies and stuff that are taking up the space.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is absolutely very true. They also, too, combine, so that 25 gig free that you get with Google, to be aware of this, is that they include your Gmail storage with that. So I have nearly 5 gig of Gmail stored used. So that eats that's like 99% of all of my usage, including like my YouTube videos that I've uploaded and my any pictures I've saved and all of my Google Docs space. 99% of all my storage usage is because of Gmail. So
wow. Wow. I never delete any email. And thank goodness that doesn't count for storage with the provider I'm using. So.
Okay. You're using.
I'm still using AOL.
Net Zero? Is it Net Zero and Mozilla or something like that?
Yeah. What did you say one time that I was? You thought I was still using CompuServe?
Yeah.
If you think it's strange in the U.S. that I use AOL, up here in Canada, people are just stare at you when you give them your email address. I've got to get another one.
The nice thing, though, is if you ever run into any problems, I'll send you up some floppy disks that they say they've got like 50 free hours on them and no problem. So you can just load those right up and get...
Yeah. There was some kind of amazing statistic back in the day that something like half of all of the CDs created in the world were for AOL. at one point, honestly, one of these days I'll look it up. But who cares anymore?
Yeah,
you better go through trouble to find that information. Remember, they were everywhere. You couldn't get away. Four of them would fall out of a magazine when you bought it. Who buys magazines anymore? You mean?
I believe that, though, because I remember, going through, being in an airplane, looking through a magazine. You literally couldn't move without knocking over a pile of AOL CDs and floppy disks, so stupid blue floppy disks that were everywhere, too.
Oh.
So, You know, it's speaking
a testament to how quickly things can change in technology business, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I actually, in fact, most of the laptops that I see these days, I haven't seen even a, like a floppy drive anywhere anymore. You just don't see them. You know, the speaking of the 80s, though, and people still stuck there.
Okay, Mr. Castle. Wasn't that your, I'm guessing that was when you were in puberty, right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So what's wrong with the 80s? Let's downgrade the 80s.
I have a lot of fondness for the 80s, absolutely. And in fact, so does Mead have a lot of fondness for the 80s. Mead, if you don't remember, they're the creators of the Trapper Keeper. And for those of us that were in high school and junior high in the 80s, remember hauling those Trapper Keepers around to keep all of our stuff organized for school. You can actually now get Mead makes a Trapper Keeper iPad and tablet holder, so you can relive those. Yeah, it's a lot more painful though now when you're walking around with your Trapper Keeper iPad holder and the jock comes over and knocks it out of your hand onto the floor. Now it's not just a simple paper cleanup. You have to, you know, you pick up the broken shards of glass and all that. But
years ago we were doing that for tablets and laptops. Rather than spending a ton of money on sleeves and cases and all this stuff, you'd get a Mead folder or whatever and rip the guts out of it and put some Velcro on it and your device, and they make great folios, and they're a lot less money, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 I don't think we could afford the actual real Trapper Keepers in my house, because I remember I remember having some, you know, Kmart special, you know, it'd be like the Trappist Keeper, you know, or something like that, with a picture of a monk on it. And
that'd be good.
trying to make it look a little more official. But so it's always kind of a nice thing. I don't know. So, like, I don't want to talk. Most of the stuff that I've got, the exciting stuff, is really about Google. On the positive side, on the negative side, though, I don't know. Did you have any interest in, or did you remember? Do you know what that Aereo was about?
Oh yeah, sure. Aereo was a service that was contested in the Supreme Court. Right? They wanted to provide online. They had antennas getting off the air, over the air broadcasts, yep, and then shipping them online. And were they doing it for free, or were they charging for it?
They were charging for it. And what they did was they had actually all of these like micro antennas and then individual storage and all this. So they had tried to be pretty clever about the way that they were doing this to not step on copyright law and public performance laws and things like that. Unfortunately, and you could tell since we're both referring to it in the past tense, just this last couple of days, Aereo lost some major court cases. They've bought them out. The founder has said, "Okay, that's it. I'm done." moving on to something
else. And the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's a pretty major court.
Yeah. 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 You know, once you hit that, it's tough to come back from that. So, it's kind of, I guess, in some ways, too bad. I don't know that it's unexpected for anybody, including the people over at Aereo. But if you had been a user of it, and especially, of course, I always wonder when these kinds of things happen. I remember recently seeing that they were running some special deals, and some of the special deals were, you know, get a subscription to Aereo for life. And, you know, and that was, you know, like $120 compared to the, you know, monthly of $20 or something like that. Are they going to try to refund any of that money, do you think? Or did that just go right into the guy's pocket? And
they'll be back in the Supreme Court, no doubt. You know? Well, maybe even a much lower court, trying, you know, a small claims court, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
People trying to get their money back on that one.
Well, fortunately, I paid in Dogecoins, so I'm covered either way. I can write that one right off on the taxes, and no problem.
It's a great idea. It's a shame that the broadcasters and Ariel cannot come to some terms.
Yeah,
that's why not? I mean, you know, especially since broadcasting gone digital, I've heard all kinds of complaints from people. And especially on the fringes of broadcast areas, not being able to get a good signal. So this is a perfect solution to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Ariel was willing to share their revenue, why not do that? Some money's better than no money in terms of coming into to the broadcast over-the-air broadcasters.
Yeah. No, I would think so as well. You know, but we've seen many, many years now of the TV and other media companies not necessarily making what seems to be the, you know, the best decisions for everybody involved. You know, and there are other ways, of course, to access the information and to get your TV on, and the sling boxes of the world and things are still doing well. I actually have bunny ears hooked up to the TV that I've got on my main floor in the bedroom, master bedroom, and I often think about hooking that. You can actually connect an antenna. You need a small add-in card, but you can connect an antenna to your computer. Windows Media, in fact, used to, I don't know if it does anymore, but Windows Media Player used to come with, or not the Media Player, but the they had their own Windows, like, Media Center, that's what I'm thinking of, used to come with an ability to record things that you would get from the antenna. I don't know if they do anymore. You can create your own an XMBC box that would allow you also to do that. It's kind of like the Windows Media Player or Media Center all grown up. I have a Plex system in my house, a Plex server that I've configured, and I stream my videos from my computer out to the other areas of the house. And that includes things that I'm able to get off of the internet or that we've ripped from DVDs and things like this that we own and all that. So there are alternatives to doing this. You know, it just, I think, like you say, though, it just does seem like there would have been a better way for the distribution companies to deal with this other than just kneecapping this guy and bringing
I have to think that maybe there had to be enmity, or maybe he didn't want to share revenue. But for someone like me, for instance, that lives far away from TV programs I'd like to see or channels I'd like to see, mm-hmm. I don't know if there are quite as many options. Ariel was I actually never did use it, but it would have been a great option for me to check up on what's happening in a city far away.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and you know, and that's kind of one of the neat things with, you know, I've got the Roku box, and one of the cool things you can do with that is they do have live. You know, it's not truly live. It is time shifted, but it's a quote unquote live video and news from cities around the country. And so, you know, I'll actually, in fact, tune into the Green Bay news occasionally just to see what's happening with our friends in Wisconsin or some of the stuff that we have going on out on the East Coast. Now, like I said, it's not truly live. There is a time delay on that, but you can stream to your computer just about anything and everywhere. You know, if you want to see, like, the World Cup, for example, you know, you can watch that right now today. You know, you could turn off the radio here, go over to your computer, and I mean, don't do that, but you could, and and go to Unity.
Oh, your radio.
Yeah.
Don't turn off your radio.
For heaven's sakes, don't turn us off. No, but you can go over to the Univision.com, and they're streaming every single game live through round 16. Now, it's all in Spanish, but you really don't need, I don't know if you need a lot of audio other than goal, you know, to know what's going on anyways. So,
Well, you might miss the subtleties of the bites. You know, you gotta have the bites.
This is true. I saw an interesting statistic that said you're more likely to be bitten playing in the World Cup than you are to be bitten by a shark swimming in the ocean. So
Really? No, yeah. That can't be right,
you have,
Michael.
You have more of a chance, a greater chance of being bitten if you're playing in the World Cup than you do being bitten by a shark if you're swimming in the ocean.
Well, if you're playing in the World Cup, what are the odds of you actually playing in the World Cup?
You know? I don't know, actually. The odds of me playing in the World Cup are pretty slim.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The odds of me watching the World Cup are slim, much less being in it.
Yes. Yes. I did tune in, though. I've got friends in Germany, so I tuned in because I wanted to gloat about USA just crushing Germany and slaughtering them, just beating the pants off of them. And then I was going to give my friend, his name is Hans, in Germany, just a really hard time. And I was getting all excited about it. I posted, just aggressive photos of soccer players with U.S. flags behind them on Facebook, copying his name and stuff. And then, of course, the U.S. lost that game. And
yeah.
And so I set myself up for that one.
You lost your gloat opportunity.
Well, fortunately, I took advantage of it before we had an opportunity to lose. So at least I got some gloating out anyways, you know, which was important to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, maybe what we should do, well, why don't we see if we can give our good friend Jay Garman a call, too. All right.
Oh, that would be great. Love to hear from Jay.
And he's more of a sports guy than I think the two of us combined. He kind of beats us out on that one. Let me see here. I'm trying to find his phone, and I think I got it. Now we're gonna find out
he's contrary to the geek stereotype on that sort of thing, right?
That's right. That's right. Mm. Here we go. I think I even got like all the buttons pushed at the right time and everything here today. I'm feeling pretty good.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Don't go posting any pictures on Facebook about it, is what you're saying, right? Hold off on that.
Yeah. That would be another gloat that you don't want to be premature about.
That's right. Mr. Yeah. Garman, are you with us? Maybe?
Told ya.
Oh, no. Jay, are you there? Do we got you? No, we don't. I know we did. I know I did, though. I had it right there. It was working. We could hear him. Why doesn't it work?
When I connected with you, I'm not using Skype now. Before, I was using Skype. And I could hear you for a couple seconds and then nothing.
Huh. That is weird. Well, let's try him one more time here. I'm going to give him another shot. Let me see now. All right, let's do it here. I mean, if I have to, I know, the one thing I could do, now I'm trying to get all fancy here. This is the problem. Whenever I try to get fancy, I just mess stuff up. What I'm trying to do here is I've got you, Dave, on one machine, and then I'm doing Jay on the...
Forwarded to an automatic voice message.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that wasn't our fault. All right, I feel better now. I think I do have this all configured. Jay told us to call him on a cell because he was going to be out and about, and I'm thinking what probably has happened is that he got a little more out and about than he even realized, or as Dave and Jay would say, oot in a boot. He's oot in a boot today. So,
I'm trying to fit in, but I haven't quite gotten that far yet.
You haven't adapted.
I'm softening it a little bit, but not quite the ooh.
Growing up in Minnesota, I definitely was very, very familiar with the various. I just had this conversation with somebody recently, totally non-tech related, talking about the variety of accent that exists in and around the Midwest, in Minnesota in particular, and how the closer you get to the Dakotas, you get the kind of elongated vowels, and the closer you get to Canada, you get the oot and a boot kind of things, and the closer you get to Wisconsin, you get that I don't know how to describe it. It's the sentences end on an ascending pitch, and so it sounds like everybody's asking you a question.
Yeah. My problem is that I don't do that, and so when I'm making a joke, and I don't have the rise in pitch, people believe everything I say because. We'll go right along with whatever I'm saying. They'll be like, "Oh, really?" because without that lilting intonation, it's like you're a police officer or a judge or something.
Maybe I should move up to Canada. I could do a lot of damage up there. That's all it takes for people to believe you.
it does. I'll be making a joke, and people, instead of laughing, will get this really serious scowling look on their face, like, "What? Really?"
Exactly. Hey, you know, one thing I do have, though, I can mention. So Jay was not able to share the question of the week last week, so I'm going to share it today, right now. And so even though we miss him today, this gives people an extra chance for the question. It's a really good question, too, in fact. So Jay's question was, why was the first UNIVAC 1 computer sold? And this is one of the very, very first computers ever. Why was the first one sold, not the first one delivered? And what customer actually got to use a UNIVAC 1 first? So back in the way back day, history of computers, this is why did all of that... did all that come together? I thought it was a really...
I can't wait to hear the answer to that, because that's sort of like the beginning of a disease, right?
Yeah. It's,
that we all suffer from.
Patient zero is... it's UNIVAC 1. So, yeah. So he'll come back and give us a little bit more information about that, and we'll do that. So that'll be good stuff. I'll try to bring him on or send him a text a little bit later and see if he can pop back to us too. The other thing I had on the list here to talk about today too, I really want to alert people to this. Now, if you're listening to the podcast, it's too late, so don't get all excited. But if you're listening, this is live listeners only. So if you're not listening to us live, this is a good indication of the reason why occasionally you should. And you can find us at WRLR.FM, or if you forget that, Facebook.com/TechTalkWRLR will give you access to hunt down all the information. Amazon. Today only until midnight, and I don't even know what time zone midnight, but till midnight tonight on Saturday, Amazon is giving you 30 free Android apps. You can grab them. There's ones that are specifically or suitable for your Kindle HD. There's a number that are worth or that are specifically for any type of Android or for your phone or for other tablets. Really, really great stuff. Some of it is really, really great stuff. Not all of it, but there is some really good stuff on there too. For example, Travel Interpreter is a neat app that I think is pretty cool. And Travel Interpreter, what that lets you do is you can do flashcards, you can learn words and phrases, you can add things. It allows you to begin to learn a number of different languages with all phrases spoken by native speakers. So it's a good educational app. Or we were talking about streaming to your computer. The Plex app, and I use Plex, so I was very excited to see this. The Plex app is also free, only today, only until midnight. You can go and grab that, and then that'll allow you to connect to your local Plex server. Or if you create and have a Plex account online, which that does have a fee associated with it, you can then access videos that you've shared up into there. And there's a whole bunch of games, Dungeon Village, AccuWeather Platinum's another another good one too that I would put in that list of ones that that you probably do want to go and grab. That, of course, if you're not familiar with AccuWeather, it's just what it sounds like, and it's a very, very accurate weather application that you can use and grab and see what's going on weather-wise around around the area. So it's really good stuff. A whole bunch of games too.
And of course, Amazon does not advertise with us, and we don't receive any money from Amazon. We're just putting the word out for information's sake.
That is exactly right. Sadly, Amazon does not support the show. if there's an Amazon exec listening right now, they're probably going, "Well, this is we don't need to. You guys are doing it for us anyway." But. But, you know, it's a good point, though, Dave, you bring that up. If you're listening right now, you can support the show. You can support the station. It's actually tax-free to do so. And not only tax-free, what am I saying, tax-free? It's a tax write-off to support us. You can have information about your business and local organization talked about on air on a regular basis with a donation, with a tax-deductible donation to us. It really helps continue great shows like this one, or actually even better shows like Rob Rigel, Who Shot First, is going to come up right after us. You listened to the Sports Corner earlier. None of this is going to keep happening. None of it is going to continue if people in the community, if people who want to get the word out about their businesses or just want to do a good thing, don't support us. And you can do that with either money or time or whatever. Go to the website, wrlr.fm. There's buttons. There's info right there for you to help and find out what's going on.
Cool. And, so wait a minute. Speaking of money and money to spare, did you see that Vladimir? There's a iPhone case, right? A gold-plated iPhone 5S case that goes for more than $4,000.
Oh,
the interesting thing about this is engraved with Vladimir Putin's face.
Do you have to pay extra for his face, or do you have to pay extra to get his face taken off?
That's just the way you get it. You know, it comes that way.
Wow, $4,000.
For an iPhone case. It's gold plated. It's not solid. It's gold plated. So
now will it if you drop it, will it protect your iPhone though?
Yeah, no. If you drop it, it invades something. I don't know, but there's not a big market. You wouldn't think, but maybe there's enough of one. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I guess you definitely want to be the first one on the block with that. You know, you wouldn't want to...
And the last one, yeah, probably.
Yes. Yeah, you wouldn't want to be a trend follower with the $4,000 case, because I think that's one of those things that that after the third person on your block buys one, you know, that it's done. The fad's done.
Yeah, yeah,
and, you know, everybody's just they're just laying around.
Yeah. Yeah, you could pick them up used pretty cheap then, I guess.
Yeah, so, $3,500, $3,700, yeah. You know, no problem.
It would be interesting to track that. It would be interesting to track what those would be going for in 3 months or 6 months,
Yes.
On eBay.
Exactly. Oh man. Speaking of the Apple OS and iPads and iPhones and things too. So here's another benefit of getting Google Glass. For those of you that are thinking about getting some Google Glass, they've been doing some really neat demos of using Google Glass to easily, just shockingly easily, to go and steal somebody's iPad passcode. You know what they use to get into their iPad. If you've got Google Glass, really all you got to do is just be looking at somebody when they're typing in their pass, and then you can go back and. replay that.
Great.
So even if it's at an indirect angle. It doesn't matter because you just kind of push it a little bit, and the algorithm, there's an algorithm built in that you can download, and it will detect shadows from the finger taps, and it uses that information to figure out what those pin codes were. This is better than like the standard over the shoulder method that we're also familiar with, you know, where you would just sit and look over somebody's shoulder. You can do this.
What do they call that? Shoulder surfing?
Yeah. Something like that. Exactly.
They do, I think.
Yeah. Exactly. And,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that is interesting is that the even from a couple of seats away and with an indirect angle and all of this, as long as the camera itself was pretty decent, that you were able to get 90% accuracy ratios on these guesses for the pin codes. And all of these different devices that we've got, I think, are going to really kind of bring to the fore the idea that, you know, passwords and codes and all these, we've been using them for so long, and they're really not that great. They're not that secure to begin with, and even less so now, especially as we move more to the mobile device world. They're just even going to be, you know, not only are they frustrating, but they're going to be less and less useful than they ever were. So maybe we'll see more of the thumbprint kind of thing and the eyeball tracker stuff.
You think telemetrics is the way to go?
I don't see a lot of really good ways to make stuff secure without using biometrics and telemetrics of some sort. Any type of device or information or something that you could hold can either be stolen or revealed or discovered. Now, that's not to say, of course, that biometric information can't be duplicated or fooled also, but I think it's a lot more difficult to do that.
Mm. Now, speaking of security and privacy, which I think privacy is actually going to be a word that is going to be eliminated from language and expectations thereof. In Utah, did you hear about this? Some groups protesting the NSA's incursion into our lives. They hired a blimp.
Yes.
A 135-foot-long blimp. 41 meters for my fellow Canadians, to fly over an NSA server center to protest all the stuff that's going on. But it's an interesting conglomeration of groups. One was Greenpeace, of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and a conservative political organization, the 10th Amendment Center. What was the banner? The banner was something very interesting.
It was illegal spying below with a large arrow.
Pretty funny, I thought.
Oh, absolutely. I thought that was pretty clever. That was in Bluffdale, Utah, and it was kind of a neat thing. I hadn't realized that the 10th Amendment Center was part of that. I'd heard that the Greenpeace was, but and the EFF was, but I hadn't heard about that. That's interesting. I mean, that really kind of shows something, too, that you've got this across-the-aisle concern and frustration over the, growing and growing ability of different organizations, our government not excluded, obviously, to collect and use information. And, that's kind of an interesting thing. Along those same lines, though, at the same time, we had, Larry Page came out, and he was talking about that he believes, basically, that we're killing people because of our fear of big data, that the more information we have and the more data that we can collect and then analyze and use, the greater opportunity we have to save lives, either through, you know, basic safety measures with our cars and other things, or, you know, with medical information that right now is locked into hospitals, silos, and into, you know, different areas and things like that. I have to agree with them on that level. I'm an enormous promoter of the value and capability of intelligent and informed data collection and usage, being able to make dramatic and valuable changes to our lives, both in general, you know, in aggregate, but also too in specific and for individuals. So
you're saying that NSA is saving lives?
As I said, intelligent and informed collection and usage.
I think Dr. Oz is saving lives.
Well, yeah, and there is Dr. Oz. Yeah, absolutely. and no one believes that more than Dr. Oz himself, apparently. So I and you know my stand on this. I couldn't have had a greater jumping up in the Schadenfreude love of life at the moment that Dr. Oz agreed to go in front of the committee and then essentially be lambasted and torn apart for his very, very questionable practices and information that he likes to distribute. And that is this is always the downside to information. When information is collected, we don't have a good process in place for vetting it, for confirming it, for validating the information that we're receiving. Then you wind up with seemingly very reputable sources providing to us very disreputable amounts of information. And Dr. Oz fits that perfectly. I think, you know, there's the fear and danger that the NSA is not only collecting information, but they're not revealing it. They're not using it in a way that does make it valuable to people, but they're using it for their own purposes. And because we don't know sometimes what those purposes are, it's frightening. It's frightening.
I mean, well, for instance, you know, you were talking about medical information and that could be useful, or data, medical data that could be useful, but it could also be used against us. The same with genetic information.
Yes. You know, and of course, this is part of the problem with the collection of data. Now, and as you know, too, on the medical side, you know, I worked for an association, an organization that we did assessment of individuals who wanted to become doctors. And so I was affiliated or had to work closely with not only doctors who were assessing people who wanted to become doctors, but the colleges and universities that train these individuals, with the Federation of State Medical Boards and Dr. Chaudhry, Hank Chaudhry, who is in charge of that, and how they use that information and the assessment to determine who should practice medicine throughout the country. But the shockingly discordant situation is that these groups don't share their information in a way that would make it valuable, more valuable to every piece of the process. The schools, the colleges and universities don't want to share the information that they have about how these young and new and potential doctors have performed in their studies. The boards that assess them don't really want to open the doors to people being able to see how the doctors performed on the assessment tests, you know, other outside of a yes, they passed, or no, they didn't. The Federation of State Medical Boards and the AMA and the AOA and the other groups don't want to make it connecting points between how many malpractice suits were filed, which ones were successful or which ones were dismissed. All of that information's there. It's all somewhere, but you can't connect it and you can't bring it together. And so you can't use it to make medical education and the medical process of evaluation and assessment of our doctors and the licensure, you can't make it more efficient and you can't make it more effective right now because we don't have that data being brought together. Very, very frustrating. Very, very frustrating situation. When I was involved in it, I was highly frustrated at different times and had to bite my tongue many, many times that when these discussions would come up and they would be shot down for very political reasons and very, what I thought were not in the best interests of the public and not even in the best interests of the doctors.
No, no, it's not in the best interest of the public. It's in the best interest of the business, of the physicians.
Yeah.
However, you can make if you really had all that information and kind of culled away bad physicians or surgeons, then that'd probably be a provider shortage, don't you think?
Well, we'd be short a whole bunch of bad physicians. I don't know. Is that a bad thing? I don't know.
Sometimes a bad doctor is better than no doctor. Look at the people that watch Dr. Oz.
There you go. That better or worse? Well, there are some legitimate fears about data sharing of that sort.
Sure.
And one of the ones that I understand, I disagree with it, but I understand it. And I hear this used in education too, is the idea that if you collect the data, people are going to look at it, but they're not going to look at it in a, in an intelligently or well-informed manner to decide who is a good doctor, who is a good teacher. You can make correlations with the data that are not going to be appropriate. For example, if you look at a hospital, two hospitals, and you just look and say, well, gee, which hospital had the greatest number of deaths reported over a certain number of time for a specific surgery, then that's the one that I want to avoid because more people here died because of this surgery than they did at the other hospital. And that seems on the face of it to make a lot of sense. But if you dig into the hospital itself and look at some other performance metrics and consider whether it's a community hospital versus a private hospital that they are taking either because they want to or just because of the situation, more patients that are in more dire straits to begin with, then all of a sudden you start to realize that, you can't just take that single number and make a decision about the hospital or even the doctors individually and decide whether or not they're good or bad. So it is tough. You want to be, and there's a big push right now. We were talking about education, teachers, same thing as well. There's a big push right now to improve, and the government uses the word quality, improve the quote unquote quality of the teacher, principal, and building evaluation systems for a number of states in order to qualify for federal funding. That word quality is so tough to define in any situation or environment. And when you've got a constantly shifting pool of students and of, the customers of our educational system, how can you determine whether the outcomes of those students are based upon the performance of the teachers, of the principals, of the system, or are they based upon some other variable that you're not able to take into account? It's a very complicated situation all the way across the board. But as I said, I'm just such a huge proponent of give me more data. I want more data. I think data is good. That's the start. That needs to be the start. Is we have to stop being afraid of the data and stop being afraid of the data collection process.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And I think it's just start. I think that fear or the elimination of that fear and the lack of justification for that fear should be first place that should go is to the National Rifle Association.
as far as like collecting all their data and sharing it.
Well, no, they're doing a great job of collecting data on gun owners, but they themselves are against the government collecting it.
Oh, yeah, yes.
They're not allowed, the federal government's not allowed by law to put any of that stuff in digital form. It's all on paper and ink right now.
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
See now that? And, so, yeah. Oh, yeah, we could go on for a while about the issues. There's actually some really good analyses of the gun danger versus safety, you know, and stuff that Harvard put together that I found fascinating. And of course, you know, that'll start a flame war here if I get into, you know, that debate.
Yeah, no.
You know,
I know how to solve this. We'll just call Dr. Oz and ask him what he thinks.
There you go. Well, you know what? Dr. Oz, though, he's discovered that if you are a gun owner, and you're concerned about that, just a little touch of pomegranate juice and some guaranica, add that, it's magic. It is a magical cure for fear of guns. So
what was this big thing? Green coffee or something? That was the big thing that raked him over the coals.
Oh, well, that's what I loved, though. That's why he even agreed to go to this thing. They did a scam on him. They did a turnaround on him. What they told him was, hey, we need you here to testify. People are using your name, your good name, sir, to sell green coffee, and those people are wrong. They can't do that. They can't use your name. You got to come and keep these quacks and scam artists off the. And then they brought in and went after him because, of course, he's the biggest quack and scam artist there is out there selling this junk. Hey, you know what? I'm going to take us around the loop though here because I bet Rob is going to probably have more to say about that anyways. But my son Justin is here for Kids Talk Tech.
Hey.
And hey, jump on in there, Justin.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Good morning.
Hi, Justin.
We can hear you wonderfully. Justin, I know you wanted to come on. I wasn't going to do a Cool Sights of the Week because Justin actually had got a great... Well, the Cool Sight of the Week that we'll leave you with is I'll give you a link to that Amazon thing, but like I said... If you don't do it today, it's too late anyways. But Justin's going to talk to us about a game that he's been playing, that the whole family actually has been playing lately.
Yeah, you're like obsessed with it lately.
I was for quite, you know, I finally got over my obsession, though. I gave it up this last week, but if you're looking for something to be obsessed about, this was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what is the game we're talking about?
You know, aside from the game, how long has it been since I've been on here?
Oh, you know what? It has been a while. Yeah, Justin has not been on the show for quite some time, nor has Olivia either. So we haven't done a Kids Talk Tech in probably a couple of months.
Well,
it's good to get this back.
Yeah, well, then let's go in.
Okay, so
the game that we're talking about this week is called Flappy Golf. And all of you guys who have had experience with Flappy Bird, please do not turn off the radio just because the word Flappy is being said.
Mm-hmm. Now, the mechanics, though, are like Flappy Bird.
Yeah, it's basically a game where it's pretty self-explanatory. It's Flappy Golf. You get a certain number of flaps, and you have to flap... what's supposed to be a golf ball but looks more like a piece of cheese into a golf hole, and along the 40 levels that they have, you're supposed to collect eggs in order to buy more different golf balls other than that strange piece of cheese.
Well, I think he's supposed to look like a chickadee or something.
That's what it says.
Yeah. So I got enough eggs that I was able to change it into an eyeball.
Now,
so I made it so that I was playing golf with a giant eyeball that was flapping around.
Well, I got it into a bullet bill that's going around on a checkered path.
Ooh. Oh,
now,
man.
This is a useful little tip that even you might not know, Dad.
Okay.
On the Samsung,
yes,
everything costs 20 eggs. But on the iOS, everything costs 200.
Oh.
I think that's because there are only 20, there are less levels on the Samsung.
Yeah,
because it's a smaller version.
Now, what Justin's referring to is that there are you can get this game for iOS, like the iPad or iPhone, or you can also get it for your Android device as well. I've only played it on the iPad, but yeah.
And everything's cost $200,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. It is a little bit easier probably to play on the iPad, though, because you got a much bigger screen to move around on. But it is, yeah, you got buttons on the side, you flap up and down, left and right, you can bounce off of walls, you can stick to certain things, or there's acid pools and water
and axes,
flying and buzzing around you and all. It's not a high intensity game, but it's fun. And it doesn't, like some of these games you play them and they're like, I found Flappy Bird so frustrating, just in mind blowingly just, I wanted to throw my phone at the wall most of the time.
And I've heard reports of thousands of people literally smashing their phones just because of Flappy Bird. And it's not just because it's so hard, it's because it's so boring after a while. In the beginning, you're like, oh, I'm gonna beat all my friends at this, I'm gonna get the high score, and then you're like, flap, flap, flap.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. And actually, I'm pretty sure that device with Flappy Bird on it is a collector's item now, because they took it off of the App Store. Mm-hmm. There was this guy at my school who sold his iPod with Flappy Bird on it for like $600.
Wow.
To one of his friends.
Oh man. That is cool.
Of course,
that
it was a pretty
cool.
Recent iPod.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, you know, so on that note, we're getting at and past the end of the show here. Justin, it looks like Justin had one last comment to make. No, he does not. But I want to say to Justin, thank you very much. Dave, it was great having this chance to talk today. And, man, I think we're going to be back on next week. And let me think. I don't know if we have an interview on next week or not. By next week, though, for sure, I will have edited and cut into pieces or done whatever I'm going to do with it, the interview that we had with the product manager for Google. And we'll have that discussion on air. Talking about some of the cool new things that are happening with Google, and we'll also to bring Mr. Jay Garman in too. So
I thought you had that Google thing ready this week.
No, not quite. I tried to, but I couldn't quite get it together. You know, typical dad problems. So
yeah. Actually, I do have one final note.
Uh-oh.
It's not Flappy Golf. That's game. It's the worst game ever. It is Flappy.
Don't pick up, whatever you do, don't get Flappy Golf. Make sure you get Flappy Golf with an A, according to Justin Kasser.
Yes.
All right, excellent. Thank you.
Cool.
Dave, thanks again for calling. Everybody who's listening right now, don't turn the dial. You got to wait. I'm going to play us a little song, Heartbeats by the Knife, but Robbie Rigel, Rob Shot First, he's coming on. He's talking medical stuff. He's talking science stuff. He's going to have some really good and a lot more insightful stuff than I did to talk about here for us on the air in the coming minutes. So don't go. Oh, my gosh. And we got puppy dogs. We got puppy dogs in the studio, too. This is a big puppy. Wow.
Hardly a puppy.
Yeah, I guess not. All right. On that note, I'm going to leave you guys. Dave, thanks again. Have a great week. All right, and this is Heartbeats by the Knife.